Hey there, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. Got a great podcast in store for you today. Got some really good questions. Again, a lot of these questions come from the comments that people leave on my blog at BikeJames.com or during my Facebook Q&A sessions that I hold on Tuesdays. So again, if you're not a fan of me on Facebook, of MTB Strength Training Systems yet, then be sure to go to Facebook/MTB Strength Training Systems and throw a like on that page. And again, Tuesday afternoons, I post up a little thing. Hey, you know, you can give you a couple hours to post your questions, and then I will come and get you an answer, and then some of them get fleshed out a little bit more on this podcast. So we got four really good things to get to today, so let's jump into it. Now, the first one is a question that I have gotten a couple times recently, and I think it has to do with the fact that I've been talking a lot about standing pedaling lately. And I think a lot of riders are really starting to buy into the value of standing pedaling, both it being a stronger position to pedal from, it's more fun when you stand up on the trail, and two, it way less wear and tear on the body that way as well. And so again, a lot of people are starting to realize the benefits of standing pedaling on the trail. But one of the common questions that I've been running into is, how do you deal with pedal bob on a full suspension bike? Because again, that's another one of the main arguments. One of the things I forgot to address in my podcast on standing climbing a couple weeks ago, and that was this idea of the increased bob. And so you're going to be, you know, quote unquote, less efficient when you stand up, because as you stand up and pedal, some of that power that you're trying to put down is going to be absorbed with the suspension soaking it up. So what do you do? So there's two things to keep in mind here. One, just like anything else, it's a skill that you will get better at. So the more that you stand up and pedal, the better you're going to get at, one, using your upper body more effectively. Like, honestly, most riders just have no clue how ineffective their upper body is on the body and or on the trail, and how little they use it. And so when you stand up and you're having to use your upper body to, you know, help support your weight and actually help contribute power to the pedal stroke itself, if it's something you haven't practiced, it's going to take a little while to get it. So again, the other thing that you're going to learn how to do is stay heavy on your pedals, which you need to do in order to obviously not have your feet slip off, but you need to stay light on the bike. And it seems like an oxymoron to say that, and it's really hard for someone who doesn't have good body awareness and movement skills to really comprehend what I'm saying. It makes absolutely no sense. Like, how can you be heavy on the pedals but light on the bike? You know, and again, I can't explain it through a podcast. You know, I can show you a video of me doing it, and you still would have to experience it to be able to understand what that feels like. But trust me, the ability to stay heavy on your pedals while staying light on the bike is something that you will learn how to do. And as you do that, you will get less and less pedal bob when you stand up to climb. But the second thing I want you to keep in mind is, who the hell cares? Honestly, drives me nuts the arguments that people make that basically boil down to, that sounds hard. Really? Like, that's the answer? Taking the easy way out is the answer in life? You know, it's never the answer in life. And so why is it the answer on our bikes? You know, maybe it is the answer, but that shouldn't be the reason that you do something. So if, you know, if you bob a little bit more when you stand up, and then that's your excuse to not stand up, that's just lazy. Grow stronger, grow fitter. You know, you can overcome that. Standing is the advantages of standing will more than overcome any disadvantages that you get from the increased pedal bob. So again, just grow stronger, grow fitter. You know, don't worry about the guy riding next to you with his seat shackled or with his butt shackled to his seat, telling you how if you stand up, you're going to make yourself tired and it's less efficient to pedal and blah, blah, blah. Just smile, keep doing your thing, having your fun, going just as fast, if not faster, than the dude who won't stand up for nothing while you're having 10 times more fun on the trail, standing up, sprinting, you know, flowing the trail. It's like, man, riding your bike should be like trail surfing, right? I mean, you can't surf sitting down on the board. You got to be up. You got to be moving your body. You got to be able to like move the bike underneath you. You know, there's so much fun that gets the trail has when you stand up. So again, don't worry about full suspension pedal bob. It's not that big of a deal. It's honestly, it's overplayed. A lot of that crap is just marketing hype. It's just bike companies trying to convince you that you need their bike and their suspension design and their valve tuning so that you bob the least and get the most efficient pedal stroke and blah, blah, blah. Who cares? Get stronger, get fitter. Get out there and just have fun and don't worry about that stuff. So anyway, sorry, hope you guys can see the little tongue-in-cheek there with that answer. I know most of you guys hearing this are probably on board with that philosophy, but if you're not, efficiency is not the ultimate holy grail on the trail. Fun is, okay? So if standing up is more fun, don't worry about losing a little efficiency, possibly. So let's move on to the next topic, which is tips for your first mountain bike race. And actually, I found this one kind of interesting, and I came at this a little bit differently, and mainly because, you know, I've competed in some mountain bike races. It's not my thing. I really don't like racing mountain bikes. To me, mountain bike racing is a really fuzzy sport. You know, if you consider, like, you know, track and field, you know, you line up. Everyone's on the same track. They're next to each other. We're going to start at point A. We're going to run to point B. Whoever gets there first wins. That's a pretty unfuzzy sport. It's pretty cut and dry who is the best rider or best runner that day. Mountain biking is a little different. You can have mechanicals. You can get a flat. You can get stuck behind the wrong rider on the single track and you can't pass them, and it allows the guys that you were trying to hunt down to get away. There's so many things that kind of have to break your way in order for you to do really well in a mountain bike race. And again, there's obviously things, training, preparation, experience. There's all sorts of things that go into making sure that you optimize your chances of having the best result possible on race day. But again, you just got to keep in mind that mountain biking is a little bit of a fuzzy sport and that the best rider doesn't necessarily win that day. You know, I mean, there's a little side rant here, story, I guess, not really rant. We'll save the rants for later. But there was some of you may be old enough to remember this, and most of you probably are not. But one of my original clients, Rich Hausman, his brother, I believe his name is Gary Hausman, I'm pretty sure. If not, I apologize. But he told me the story one time of how Gary actually was the downhill world champion for a day because he had qualified, had one of the worst qualifying runs. So he was one of the first riders to go down. And about three quarters of the way down his run, it starts pouring rain. So he was the only rider that day who had a dry course. Who do you think won? Again, it wasn't the best rider of the day. You know, he won because of the way things broke out for him and the luck that he had. Now, he happened to get, busted for smoking pot and lost his world title. A couple days later, so he's not on the books for that, but, you know, look it up. It's a true story, but it just goes to illustrate that, again, racing is a very fuzzy sport. You know, if the guy in front of you has a dry track and it rains when you're going and you got to deal with mud and wet roots, I mean, it don't matter how good you are. Odds are the dude who had the dry track is probably going to go faster than you. So just some things to keep in mind, but here's my point. Here's my tips for your first mountain bike race. Don't expect to do well. And I tell you this based on my experience of my first competition with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and that's what everyone was telling me. There's a saying in Jiu-Jitsu that I really like. You either win or you learn. There are no losers. You learn from your losses. And so, you know, you either win or you learn. And that's what was drilled into my head going into that first competition is, look, you need to prepare. You need to do everything that you can. You need to walk in and have a positive mindset. You know, you need to believe in yourself, but you also just need to be realistic with the fact that you're probably not going to do real well your first time. You know, the nerves are going to be there. You're not going to know how to deal with the nerves. You're not going to know how to deal with the pace of competition. That's another thing. Like, there is a level of intensity that gets hit during competition that you simply cannot, you know, recreate in training. So you can't train for competition on some levels. The only way that you can get better at competing is by competing. So, again, there's all sorts of resources, advice, you know, things to help you get ready for your first ride. So I kind of wanted to throw out a little bit different view on it, you know, when I answer that question, kind of like followed up on the podcast here, and that is to just keep things in perspective that mountain biking is a fuzzy sport to race in, that sometimes things are going to break your way, sometimes they're not. The first time that you race, you're probably not going to do well because there are just factors and experiences that you're not used to dealing with and is going to take some time to do. So now you may show up and win, who knows, you know, but odds are for your very first race or two, you need to look at it more as a learning experience and learn how to, you know, do better in competition rather than looking at it as, man, I'm going out there and I'm going to like really, you know, I don't know, like my ego, my whole identity is going to be based on how well I do here. Like I really see myself as a really good rider and I'm a fast rider. And so if I show up to this first mountain bike race and I don't do well and I don't place well, that is going to shake my faith in myself and what I've been doing. And that's just not the way to look at it. So, you know, just keep it all in perspective and remember to have fun with it is the main thing. So, it's kind of some tips for your first mountain bike race there. So the next thing that I wanted to talk about is actually a post that I did last week, and that was talking about the posture that you see on cross country professional riders. And basically somebody had, you know, sent or made a comment, I forget on what a blog post, but he rightfully pointed out that a lot of very, very, very fast riders, in fact, some of the fastest riders in the world, from, you know, cross country riders, have very different posture on the bike than what I talk about in my body clinic videos and things. So, you know, when I'm talking about the deadlift and how it applies to riding, when I, you know, that the good, strong posture on the bike, I really emphasize that a lot. But like I said, when you look at the cross country pros and then you look at a lot of fast riders, you know, local fast riders, a lot of them have absolutely horrendous posture. And so, you know, why is that? Is posture overrated with that? And, you know, there were a couple things, again, if I touched on these things in my, in the blog post, sorry, and I'll just touch on them briefly and kind of go into them a little bit more. But, you know, one, pro athletes, they often will compromise their body to achieve the highest levels of performance. And, you know, just ask any retired NFL running back if being a professional athlete is synonymous with health. Okay. I mean, you see some of these old pro athletes in their 50s and 60s, and they can barely walk. They can barely move because it's not about health. They compromise the health of their body. And this is one of the things that like absolutely drives me up the wall with this whole, like, you know, sports equals health thing. It doesn't. Sports isn't about health. The things that you do to your body to achieve the level of performance that it takes to be a professional athlete is not healthy. So now they make this trade-off willingly because they pay their bills based on it. But this is one of the reasons that you don't, if you're not a professional rider, you shouldn't be emulating professional riders' programs and postures and things that they're doing, because again, they're doing things from a symmetry standpoint, from just an overall health standpoint, that aren't healthy, aren't good for you. So that's the first thing you need to keep in mind when you're looking and evaluating what pro riders do. Remember that pro riders will often compromise their body and their long-term health in order to achieve the highest level of performance in the short term. And, you know, I'm not making any judgment. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, I think that that's fine. But the problem that I have is that when they get held up as these models of fitness, and so, you know, people look at a cross-country pro rider and they're like, man, that guy's really, really fit. You know, I want to be as fit as him. It's like, no, you don't. You really don't. Like the pain, the back pain, the shoulder pain, the neck pain, the day-to-day aches and pains and things that the professional rider has to deal with. I mean, why do you think they have a whole team of chiropractors and masseuses and, you know, nutritionists and like all these people that follow these pro teams around? I mean, it's not just because they just want a massage to feel good. They hurt. So, again, keep that in mind. Like when you see that posture, You know, it may help their performance in the short term, which I'm not really sure it does. But again, not something that you necessarily want to be thinking about yourself. So the next thing is that pros cheat differently than amateurs. And again, somebody actually had pointed out, one of the guys, Nino Schurter, again, I'm not up on the cross country race scene, so I apologize if I slaughter that guy's name, but I've seen him around. I know he's, you know, one of the top cross country guys, but you know, they pointed out that, you know, he actually has pretty good posture, and he's got a good hip hinge, and that when you watch him descending, you can actually see a lot of the elements of what I talk about in my body position in what he's doing. Now, again, on the blog post, I talked about powerlifters, because powerlifters are a really good example. If you watch like a pro powerlifter deadlift, you'll see his back is rounded way more than what I would recommend to do in the gym. But again, one, he's a professional powerlifter. He is willing to risk some injury for that. He's making that trade-off willingly and knowingly. But two, when you look at how they cheat, a powerlifter cheats, or even like a pro rider, quote-unquote, cheats, they cheat differently than amateurs. And so, again, if you look at where they're bending, a lot of these riders, they bend over a lot more from the thoracic spine. Basically, they're collapsing in the upper back more, and they're maintaining a stronger lower back position than your average amateur rider. Your average amateur rider who has a rounded back is rounding through the upper and lower back, which is a huge, huge difference than just rounding in the upper back. Because keeping that lower back in a better position is going to increase your pedal power and all of that stuff. So it is very important that you have a good core position for maximum pedal strength and power. And again, if you look at these pro riders, even though they're bent over a lot and they've got really horrific upper body posture, you'll see that their hips are actually in not as bad a position as, you know, probably your average amateur rider is. So again, something to keep in mind there. And then last thing was the idea that, you know, really no one's gonna, how do you know that having better posture wouldn't be better on the bike? I mean, again, I talk about this a lot. It's one of the best recent examples of it, but is the whole idea of the high jump. And the fact that, you know, up until not too long ago, world and Olympic championships were being won with what we now recognize as inferior high jump technique. Everyone in the world did it. It was the quote unquote best way to high jump. But then somebody else came along and said, well, what if we tried jumping this way, and invented the modern high jump technique, and high jumping went, you know, took off, and now the records and stuff are way higher than what they were with the old technique, even though at the time that old technique was the best. That's what the pros did. So again, you got to keep that in mind, that the world of sport is littered with things that were billed as the best way to do something that were really just the best way that we knew at the time. And that, you know, riding, cycling especially, is one of the how do I put this? Tradition is such a strong factor in cycling, and it is one of the last sports to adopt new training techniques and methodologies. And so I honestly believe that in the next 10 years or so, that you will see a much bigger emphasis on posture, both on and off the bike training, and that these cross-country pros will start to have better posture on the bike and start to recognize that their piss-poor posture that they have right now is actually holding them back in some ways and is responsible for a lot of the aches and pains and stuff that they deal with. So, again, they'll never be perfect because, again, there's in the short term, you know, there are some advantages to just kind of doing the easiest thing, and sometimes just collapsing the chest and whatever is the easiest thing. But but really, I don't believe that that's the best way to do it. So that, you know, like I said, I wanted to touch on a couple of those things. You know, a lot of this ties back to Dan John's Four Quadrants of Training, which was an article that I linked to from the blog post, and in which it talks about the, you know, understanding where you're at in your development as a rider, and that, you know, what he calls quadrant four, Q4 athletes are like, you know, nature's freaks, and that they need and do things differently than other than athletes in other quadrants. And unless you're a professional athlete, then odds are you're not a Q4 athlete. You are somewhere in one of those other quadrants, which means that you need a little bit better rounded approach to your training. So again, just, you know, if you haven't had a chance to check that article out, I highly recommend it because it does a good job. You just go to my blog at bikejames.com and just do a search for, you can just do a search for Dan John or just, you know, four quadrants of training, and you'll find a couple good articles based on that. But again, it's just, you know, you can look to the pros for inspiration, but without understanding what, where you're at and what you need versus where they're at and what they need, then you can misunderstand what you're seeing. And I think that a lot of times the posture is one of those things. So the last thing that I wanted to talk about, last kind of question that I had gotten, and I forget where I got this question. This was one I've actually been wanting to talk about for a minute or for a couple weeks here. And basically, a guy asked me a question about, won't strength training interfere with endurance training? And the idea is what he called, you know, what's called neural confusion. And this is a legitimate thing. And this is one of the reasons why, like, CrossFit and all this, like, you know, train everything all the time crap doesn't work in the long term, is because you do need to focus your training in certain area, in a certain area for a certain period of time in order to see significant improvements in that area. Again, the new person who's never worked out before can do a workout that does everything and see results, but eventually you're going to have to hit the point now, or the point where you're focusing your training more. But the problem is that sometimes this starts to get used as an excuse by riders who don't want to do more, who don't want to do strength training. And so they basically say, well, look, this is neural confusion. If I do any strength training whatsoever, it's going to neurally confuse my body. It, you know, it's going to send conflicting signals to the body. I just want to focus 100% of my training on endurance training, because that's going to mean that my body will adapt the best to endurance training, and that anything that's not endurance training, strength and power training, will actually take away from my ability to adapt to that. And again, you know, on the surface, that argument makes sense, especially considering that this whole idea of neural confusion and you know, sending conflicting signals to the body and not really getting optimal results is a very real thing, and very real thing that you need to be concerned about. But here's the problem. Here's what I told this writer. You know, a couple things to consider. One, strength training is really more movement practice. So no matter how you look at it, you need to have something in your program that allows you to work on maintaining and restoring optimal movement, you know, especially in the face of a sport like ours that causes a lot of overuse injuries. So, you know, even one of the problems is, and this is, it's hard to explain, but like one of the problems with strength training is the term strength training, that people get confused. They think that strength is the goal. Strength is not the goal. Strength is a symptom of something. Strength is a symptom of your ability to move and create tension within that movement pattern. Okay, the more efficiently you can move and the more tension you can create in that movement pattern, the stronger you are. But the point is not to just lift more weight and get quote unquote stronger. So when you start to realize that strength training is really a way to practice your movement and make yourself more efficient at creating tension within that movement, you start to see that, like, oh, well, I mean, I always kind of need to do that. Like, I always need to have something in my program that's going to allow me to, you know, address other things other than just pedaling my bike and riding my bike. So, you know, we have a sport that we get a lot of overuse injuries, and so strength training and just the ability to maintain balance is very important. So, you know, we always need to have that. And honestly, almost all of the experts I've talked to agree on this, and that is that strength is very important for all other physical qualities, including endurance. In fact, you don't want or need to focus 100% of a program on a single thing. You have to do some work on the secondary qualities that support your primary focus. You know, you can easily create a program that focuses on specific neural and physical adaptions, but also allow for strength gains or even just maintenance really during the season. You're really just worried about maintenance more, and you'll get better results from that than a program that focuses solely on one thing. So again, even you have a primary quality like endurance that you want to improve, but there are secondary qualities like mobility and strength that support that primary thing. And so you have to have those in your program even at a low level. So again, you know, if you look at high level coaching texts, especially like, you know, you look at like the old Russian stuff that a lot of our modern day periodization is based on, and you'll see that the idea of focusing on a single quality refers more to avoiding doing a low level of everything instead of a high level of one thing and a low level of something else. So again, that's what you need to be focusing on. We don't need to be focusing on just one thing, and we don't need to be focusing on everything at a low level. We need to be focusing on one thing at a high level and then a bunch of things at a lower level and more of a maintenance phase. So again, just by the nature of our sport, we will be doing far more cardio training because riding counts as cardio. Even if you don't think about it that way from a training standpoint, it is cardio training. So just by the nature of our sport, we're going to be doing far more cardio training than strength training in the totality of training hours. So there's really no way that you're going to create quote unquote neural confusion by spending, you know, a couple hours a week working on strength. Okay, you're spending hours and hours and hours out on the trail. You're doing cardio training on top of that, and then you end up spending a couple hours on strength training. It is not going to confuse your body. So again, I say this, you know, again, like I hope people understand, I'm trying to shake people out of their just the mindsets that hold them in when I say stuff like this. But honestly, this is a lazy argument. This is, it's mainly used by riders who they're just looking for an excuse not to strength train. So they don't want to strength train. So they start to latch on to anything that sounds like it might kind of agree with their view of things, which is that strength training isn't necessary to be a successful endurance athlete or mountain biker. So, which is just completely not true. All right, you do need strength, you do need mobility. Those things support your endurance, and there's really no getting around that. So, so hopefully that clears up that, you know, if anyone, you know, if you've had that thought yourself or someone brings that up, then, you know, it's a pretty easy thing to explain away. It's, you know, there's a big difference between doing a low level of everything all the time, which is not what we want, versus doing a high level of one thing, which in our case is endurance, and a low level of the other things to kind of like make sure those secondary qualities are supporting our primary focus. So, again, just kind of a more holistic view of training versus the more Western A plus B equals C result crap that just doesn't work. So, you know, the body and training is such a dynamic thing that you can't just, you know, look at it as a simple math equation of if I ride X number of miles at this heart rate, it's going to result in this level of performance. You know, it's just not how it works. So, so hopefully that clears some of that stuff up. But anyway, so that's it. That's the four questions that I had. Hopefully that was some good info for you guys. You know, like I said, I really enjoy doing these things and getting a chance to explain some of my thoughts behind these things a little bit more. So, you know, if you got any questions or comments on this, be sure to visit my blog at bikejames.com and just, you know, post a comment here on this blog post. Yeah, so I guess that's basically it. I'll get going. I'll let you guys go and enjoy the rest of your day. Hopefully you got some good riding planned for the weekend. And if not, then hopefully you got some riding plans soon. I'm definitely going to be getting out this weekend and hopefully be taking a trip here in the next couple weeks. Plan on trying to get a couple day trip to go hit up some of the downhill resorts here in Colorado. So back when I first moved here, driving 3 hours to go downhill all day and then driving 3 hours back home all in one day didn't sound so bad. But after doing it for a few years, I feel like I kind of need to take a weekend trip and hit up a couple of those resorts and not try to fit in and, you know, cram them into just a day trip. So, anyways, I guess that's what happens when you get old, huh? But, so that's it. So I'll get going. Oh yeah. That's what I wanted to do. I remember there was something else I had in mind. iTunes. You can subscribe to me on iTunes. So you get these things automatically. Please leave a little review. You know, if you like the podcast, let other people know about it. Really appreciate it. And yeah, so once again, it's been James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems. Check me out on the web at bikejames.com, and I will talk to you guys next time.